right, morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Ayin Hey. We are on Ayin Dalad Beis. We are finishing up the sugya of Kiddush Hashem. The Gemara yesterday on Ayin Dalad, fundamental daf yesterday, fundamental concepts came up in yesterday's daf. Kimalei b'derabim minei, and the basic premise of Kiddush Hashem, the Gemara Chamuros. So in the course of the discussion, the Gemara yesterday wrapped up the issue of Kiddush Hashem, both in terms of outlining that there are three Isurim in the Torah, where even if privately asked to, one has to sacrifice his life in order to, before violating these three Isurim, Shechus Damim, Gilur HaRais, Avodah Zarah. The Gemara learned it after, through a series of drashas yesterday, that for those three, you know, one of them is a Svaro, the Ritzicha is a Svaro, but anyway, for those three, one has to give up their life rather than violate those Isurim, even if it's asked privately, done privately. And then the Gemara introduces to the concept of Kiddush Hashem, where if either it's in public, or there's Gzeiras Malchus, so once it's a Kiddush Hashem involved, so then you have to give up your life for anything, by anything included, even a mitzvah kala. The Gemara's example yesterday of mitzvah kala, even a minug, even something which is a Jewish practice, or some sort of, as Rashi, I quote the Rashi yesterday, tzad yadus, as long as there's something Jewish about it. Obviously, that in itself is not perfectly clear what that means, but it's some sort of Jewish custom. So then, and asked to give that up, either to give up the custom or to give up your life. And the question and the demand is made in public. In public means in front of 10 Jews. So then so then you have to give up your life, and that's the idea of Kiddush Hashem. The Gemara asked the question yesterday. Esther was public. Right, Esther Farhasia, the Gemara gave two answers, two fundamental answers. One is that she is Karka Olam, and the other one is Hanasa Atzmo. And we just quickly delved a little bit into that. Obviously, that's the topic and discussion that we could spend a lot of time on. But we're going to continue in the Gemara. We are 9 Dalam at Beis. We're picking up right where we left off yesterday. It's 9 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Ba'o Mine Mirabi Ami. The following question was asked from Rabbi Ami ben Noach mitzvah kedushas Hashem, or ein mitzvah kedushas Hashem. What about a ben Noach? So is a ben Noach going to be subject to this idea of kedushas Hashem? Ben Noach is given the ultimatum of either violating one of the seven Noachide laws or to give up his life. Does he need to give up his life rather than violate one of his isurim? So I'm Rabbi Tashma. So Abaye comes at us with what would seem to be a simple proof: Shevah mitzvos nistavim b'nei Noach. Well, look at the beginning. The beginning of the Ben Noach Sugya, which takes us all the way back to Daphne and Vav in Sanhedrin. So the Gemara there said that there are seven Noachai laws. V'imisa tamne havyan. Now, if Kiddush Hashem is another one, so that would bump up the number from 7 to 8. But Rava says to Abai, that's not a proof, and that's not compelling. Because Inu v'cholav Yisrael. Because when we say Kiddush Hashem is not necessarily an independent mitzvah. Kiddush Hashem could be built into the fabric of each of the mitzvahs themselves, meaning, let's say, for example, there's a mitzvah for Ben Noach of Gilu Arayos, and built into the mitzvah of Gilu Arayos, you could have Kiddush Hashem, meaning that Gilu Arayos is so important, so significant that you got to give up your life for it. So, in other words, it could very well be that Kiddush Hashem applies to Ben Noach, and it's not counted as its own separate mitzvah because it's just simply built into the other mitzvahs.
Might have counted by us?
Huh? No. I take it back. Kiddush Hashem is one of the 613. Okay. So the Gemara over here takes us to Tanakh in Malachim Beis. So there was a non-Jewish general. His name was Naaman. If you remember your Navi, so he had Saras, he was cured from his Saras. Anyway, he found a Rebbe, and his Rebbe was Elisha. And so when he took his shalas over to Elisha the Navi, and the Gemara over here is describing the following scenario. So basically, here was the shaila of Naaman to Elisha. Naaman says here, look, I am a general of the army, and I'm very close with the king. Now, the king of Aram, so he's an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. All right. But what happens occasionally is that he takes me over to his base of Avodah Zarah. Now, I'm a Ger Toshav, meaning I'm not going to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah. But when we go to the base of Avodah Zarah, So he's going to bow down. I'm going to bow down just because I'm supporting him when he bows down. So he asks Elisha, can I go or can I not go? Okay. So just to help out the king. So Uksiv, Vayamalo, Lech Leshalom. Now Elisha says to Naaman, yeah. In other words, so we gave him a hetter. Okay, so. Nice story. The Gemara over here now wants to make the following point based on the episode. Top of Ein Hamad Aleph, Vimi Solole Malay. So the Gemara says, now, if Kiddush Hashem is incorporated into each of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, so then what should Elisha have told Naaman? He should have said to him, you can't do that. Meaning, Avodah Zarah is so significant, you cannot give up your life for Avodah Zarah. And even though it's the king, and even though the king told you you got to bow down, but and even though you're not really bowing down, you don't really believe in it, but still, in other words, it's Avodah Zarah. And you got to give up your life for Avodah Zarah. But that's not what Elisha told Naaman. Elisha told Naaman, you can go. So the Gemara says, Habitzin Abifar Hesya. So the Gemara says, well, no, maybe that proof is not a compelling proof. Because over there, it could very well be that they went privately, not publicly. Now, there's a fascinating Rashi over here, and Rashi writes the following. What does that mean, privately, publicly? Rashi says that even when the Gemara was entertaining this idea that there's Kiddush Hashem by the Bnei Noach, it only means Kiddush Hashem in front of 10 Jews. The Pasuk, when describing Kiddush Hashem, says, V'nitzakshi b'sok b'nei Yisrael, meaning that the only time that there's a requirement to make a Kiddush Hashem is only when found in front of a quorum of Jews, of 10 Jews. So, when they went back to Beis Rimon, so it was a house of idolatry, and it was located in Chutz La'aretz, and it was surrounded by non-Jews. That, says Rashi, in this context, in the context of this Gemara, that's tzina. That's privately. Privately just simply means there are no Jews around over there. So there, you want to aid and abet the king in terms of being over to Avodah Zarah, and yeah, you're going to bow down to the Avodah Zarah itself, but there's no requirement to Kiddush Hashem because simply there are no Jews over there. But maybe what the Gemara is arguing now is that maybe if this were to be done in front of 10 Jews, so maybe there would be an idea of Kiddush Hashem. So that's the Gemara's deflection, and the Gemara does not resolve the issue of whether or not there's a Kiddush Hashem by Bnei Noach, yes or no. The Gemara does not conclude. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav. We are now concluding now the 8th parak of Sanhedrin with an episode. It's fair to say that this episode has been spoken about at length by many Rishonim. So there was a man who was lovesick. And I don't mean that here just as a euphemism or as an expression. He was literally lovesick. He met a girl and he became infatuated with her. And we'll get to that point in just a moment. Well, we'll get there. And so he became infatuated with her to the point where he was so obsessed over her that he himself was sick. And he became really significantly ill. And now, Shalal Rofen Va'amrein Lo Tekanat Shiti Ba'alo. And so they went to the doctors, and the doctors wrote the following prescription. And the doctor said, okay, so in order for him to heal, he's going to have relations with that woman. That was the prescription of the doctors. Amru Chachamim Yamos Valti Ba'alo. So the Chachamim said, this is one of the Gimel Chamurs. This is Gilui Arayus. And so therefore, he has to give up his life rather than have relations with her. Okay. Just give me a moment, and we'll. I understand you want to label it, and we are going to label it. Again, we're getting there. We're getting there. We're not. We're almost there. Just be a little more patient. We're going to get there. So ve'al tivallo tama lefne lefana varuma. Now the Gemara over here, which is going to try to suggest other things that he may do that may help him out. It's not clear from the Gemara right now whether these are the doctors talking or this is the Gemara talking. Meaning, because the doctors give a very clear prescription, and now it'd be a little bit strange if the Gemara now is giving other suggestions of the doctor. But it could very well be, I mean, even if it's the doctor's talking right now, it could very well be that, look, the doctor says, look, you want the best prescription? So this is what you should do. In other words, if that's not available, okay, fine, so try this and try that. Okay, so anyway, so how about just standing in front of her while she's naked? So the Gemara says, no, the Yamus Valta Amo Lefanav Arama. The Gemara says, no. In other words, again, he has to give up his life. How about if they have just some sort of lewd conversation one with another? So So the Gemara says again, no, he should give up his life rather than engage in any kind of immoral behavior with her. Not limited to, clearly as the Gemara just got done saying, not limited to just bia, but even things that are not actual bia, but things that are still lewd and immoral and inappropriate. So the Gemara says it would be now it would be better. Let me say clearly, he needs to give up his life rather than involve himself in any of those kinds of activities. Now, okay, so the psak is very clear, and here's the part that's not very clear. This woman in question right now, is she a married woman? Or is she not a married woman? Now, pligi bar Rav Yaakov bar Yidi v'Rav Shmuel bar Nachman echanam raishas yishayso v'chanam rapinuy haisa. So the Gemara says either she is a married woman or she's not a married woman. The Gemara, actually, the Amoraim have a debate on this very issue. Now, the next point, which is kind of obvious and logical, the Gemara makes it. Bishlam laman dar meishas ishay says shapir. This entire episode makes perfect sense if we're talking about where she's a married woman. If she's a married woman, now that's arayas. That's eishas ish. That is having relations with a married woman or engaging in other kinds of lewd behavior with a married woman. So even though the other behaviors, by the way, parenthetically, are not actually arayos, meaning arayos by its very definition means having relations with a married woman, but still, any other kinds of immoral and lewd behavior with another man's wife still is going to fall under the category of, we'll introduce you to a term, it's called avizrayu da arayos, meaning it's not erva mamish per se, but still, it could be subfiled, subcategoried under arayos, and one has to give up his life rather than not only violate erva mamish, but even a subcategory of arayos. This idea of avizrai de arayos, by the way, is presented by the Ran and Psachim. It's also by Rabbeinu Yonah. Anyway, the Rishonim speak out this idea, and our Gemara seems to be not a strong proof. Gemara pretty much says it, that even though it's other forms of lewd behavior, but if it's another man's wife, so that falls under the category of arayas vis-a-vis, one needs to give up his life rather than violate that. So the Gemara says, so all this would make, of course, perfect sense if she was a married woman. But if you subscribe to the viewpoint that she is a penuya, that she's a single woman, so my kolehai. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Now, for a man to have relations with a single woman, now, it is not arayas, it's certainly not appropriate. It's certainly a bittul aseh, meaning a man and woman should get married. But over here, to prevent the relations from occurring, when his life is in jeopardy, the Gemara says, that part I don't understand. Why not? So the Gemara says, Rav Papa Amar Mishum Ka Mishpacha, Rav Achabre Rav Ika Amar Kedesh Lo Yeh Benos Yisrael Prutzos Ba'arayas. So the Gemara says, there are two considerations over here. If in fact she was a single woman, one says the Gemara is Pagam Mishpacha, meaning that, yes, if it were just the question of her having relations with him to save his life, and obviously you would need her consent. But if it was just relations in order for her to save her life, what that would do is introduce a tremendous amount of shame to her family, that she had to be involved in this kind of behavior. And so for the Pagam Mishpacha, the Gemara says, that's why the rabbis prohibited such behavior. And it's interesting, again, if you just think about what the conclusion of what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that Pagam Mishpacha is so important, so significant, that somebody's life is going to have to be lost rather than to save the shame and embarrassment of an entire family. Okay. Another suggestion of the Gemara in terms of if she's not a married woman, so why should they have relations? So the Gemara says is because it opens up a Pandora's box. Meaning, if the Chachamim would have allowed relations to have occurred in such a situation, so then Benos Yisrael will be prutz and brayos. Meaning, now you have a heter, and once you open up a heter like that, so then there would seemingly be no end to it, and it would be really a debasement, a demoralization of our values towards the sanctity of intimacy. Yeah. Yes. Right. Same idea. Velintsava Mintsav. The suggestion that probably you were wondering. Well, if she was a single woman, so and they want to have relations and they want to have it in the context of Kedusha, so let them get married. So what's the big deal? So the Gemara says, Lo miyasve daite. That would not have helped his condition, his medical condition. Why? Because Rav Yitzchak dam Rav Yitzchak miyam shechar beis hamikdash lint la tam bia v'nitzna la ovrei avera. So Rav Yitzchak says that from the time that the beis hamikdash was destroyed, so the real enjoyment, the true enjoyment of intimacy between a husband and wife is not really experienced, but it is only can be experienced by those people who violate averas. Shenamra ma'im geduvim mimtakuv alechem sesarim yin'am. The pasuk of Mishlei, which we've quoted earlier in the Masechta, and we're quoting now again, is that stolen water is sweeter. And the hidden bread is so much more appealing. Rashi over here says that the lechem over here is a euphemism, meaning that relations between a man and a woman. Right? Rashi quotes the pasuk from Yosef. Right? Kim alechem asher hu ochel. Right? In other words, that only when one engages in avera does one really have the kind of benefit and enjoyment of bia as it once was, since the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, there's a lot more to discuss over here. Why since the Chorban Beis HaMikdash? What is the connection between Chorban Beis HaMikdash and Tambiya? That in of itself deserves its own treatment. But anyway, the Gemara, for our purposes right now, say it nice and succinctly and easy, and that is, it wouldn't have helped his medical condition if they would have just gotten married, so therefore that wasn't an option. Okay. So an important ending to the eighth parak over here, that not only does one have to give up their life for the Gimel Chamuros, but this idea of subcategories within the Gimel Chamuros. Meaning even if it's not Erva per se, Arayas per se, but it's just some sort of subcategory within Arayas, so to that also the person has to give up their life as well. And then the Gemara pointed out that that's assuming if she was a married woman. If she was not a married woman, if she was a Penuya, so what would be the preventative? Why did the Chachamim say that he can't have relations with her? So the Gemara gave two suggestions. One because of Pekam Mishpacha. The other one is because it opens up a Pandora's box. And why not get married? The Gemara says to that, it's not going to help him. Hajjan Lachman Zoramar, that's the end of the eighth parak. And now we begin the ninth parak of Sanhedrin. We're in the middle of Ayin Ham and Aleph, and by word of introduction. Just let's take a broader look now at our Masechta. What's been happening for the second half of Sanhedrin? So since the sixth parak of Sanhedrin, we talked about the onesh of Mises Bide Adam. In other words, there are capital punishments. And the Mishnayos since then has been very organized. The seventh and the eighth parak of Sanhedrin has detailed with us all the isurim that result in an onesh of skila. Back in the seventh parak of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah brought down for us 18 different isurim in the Torah where the punishment is going to be skila. Since then, we have been outlining all 18 of them, and diving deep into the 18 Isurim that have an onesh of skila. At the end of the 8th parak, the Mishnah kind of took a left turn, but only because once we were talking about the Ben Sora Mora, who is subject to skila, and he is nidon ashum sofa, so then the Mishnah took a turn to discuss Abab Bemachteres, someone who's tunneling into your house, so you get to kill him because nidon ashum sofa. He's going to be judged not on what's happening, but on the projected future of what will happen. Okay, but now that we are done with the seventh and the eighth parak of Sanhedrin, so now we are back to a super organized Masechta in which we're going to be discussing the next of the Chayvei Mises Beis Din. After Skila comes Sreifa. And so our Mishnah is going to introduce us to the Isurim of the Torah that are subject to Sreifa. It's not a long list. Meaning, as opposed to Skila, where there are 18 Isurim in the Torah that are subject to Skila, when it comes to Sreifa, so the number, I think, is 2. Okay? Not many Isurim in the Torah that are subject to Sreifa. The Mishnah, let's start it off. Elohim and Nesrafim. These are the people subject to the Sreifa penalty. Haba'al Isha Ubita Ubas Konshizinsa. A person who has relations with a woman and her daughter. So, we're going to discuss this in much greater detail in just a moment. So right now, I'm just going to gloss over the first example of the Mishnah, and we'll move to the second one. Second example of the Mishnah is Bas Kohen Shezinsa. As we've discussed already extensively throughout our Masechta, a Bas Kohen who's married and has an adulterous relationship. So the general penalty for an adulterous relationship is Mises Beis Din. But specifically chenek, strangulation, which is low on the totem pole. For a bas kohen, she's a bas kohen, she has more kedusha, it's more of a debasement. So for her, the punishment is going to be higher. The punishment is going to be sreifa. We already discussed earlier in the Masechta, this Baskoni is going to get sreifa. That's when she was a mu'rasa. That's when she was an asua. That was for both. So if you remember, there were Tanaim who debated this very issue in terms of when exactly she's going to be subject to the sreifa penalty. But for our purposes right now, we can leave it nice and we can leave it off nice and simple. And that is that Bas Kohen, who commits adultery, is subject to the sreifa penalty. Okay, now we are going to be spending the rest of today talking about the first line of the Mishnah. The rest of today and all of tomorrow.
Married.
Now, your question is legitimate because the pasuk doesn't say that she's married, right? But we know through the Torah Shebaal Peh that she's married. Okay. Now we'll be spending the rest of today talking about the first line of the Mishnah, and that is Haba al Isha Ubita. Now, before I translate that line of the Mishnah, let me just first go through the rest of the Mishnah. Yesh Bechal Isha Ubita. Now, included in this category of Isha Bita, the following subcategories. There are going to be 9 women included in this prohibition. Bito, your very own daughter, meaning you had a daughter but out of wedlock. And so it's not your wife's daughter because she's not your wife. But a man fathered a daughter, and now for him to have relations with that daughter that he fathered, that is not only a chiyuv misa, but a chiyuv sreifa. Bas bito, bas beno. And that would be true not only for his daughter, but for his granddaughter as well. And granddaughter could be either through his daughter or through his son. So that is women's 1, 2, and 3. Bas ishto, bas bito, bas beno. Now we move on to discuss his wife's daughter and his wife's granddaughter. And again, that's 3 because it's his wife's daughter and his wife's granddaughter, meaning either his wife's son's daughter or his wife's daughter's daughter. And then chamoso, ve'im chamos ve'im chamav, and one's mother-in-law, and your mother-in-law's mother, or your father-in-law's mother. These are the 9 women that are incorporated, included in this iser of isha ubita. So really, even though it's, I guess we can call it one iser, but it's one iser that actually plays out to 9 different women. Stay with me. There's a lot of information coming up. Okay. Let's start with the Gemara. Now, before we start with the Gemara, look at that line of the Mishnah, which really is going to be we're going to be focusing a lot of our attention and energy this morning. The Mishnah starts off with the words Eloin and Nisraf, and these are the women who are going to be subject to Sreifa. Habal Isha Ubita, man who has relations with a woman and her daughter. Now, the word Isha, when presented in the Mishnah, for that matter, in any kind of discussion or communication, Isha can mean one of 2 things. Isha can mean your wife, or Isha could simply mean a woman. Now, when you read the Mishnah simply, the Mishnah says Isha Ubita, the simplest understanding of the Mishnah is that one will be subject to Sreifa if he has relations with either the Isha or her daughter. Now, think that through. If Isha over here meant his wife, certainly he's not going to be subject to Sreifa for having relations with his wife. That's his wife. That's Mutter. So it clearly can't be referring to his wife. So what would be a scenario in which one would be subject to having a Sreifa penalty for having relations with a woman and the woman's daughter? So the solution seemingly would be where a man had relations with either his mother-in-law's mother and her daughter, i.e. your mother-in-law. If a man would have relations with either of those 2 women, he would be subject to Sreifa. So, it could be that the Isha made reference to in our Mishnah is your mother-in-law's mother and your mother-in-law. Because that would then be a good way to explain the Mishnah. That's how a man could have relations with either of those 2 and be subject to the Sreifa penalty. Here comes the problem. Meaning, what I just suggested in the Mishnah is wonderful, but in order to really appreciate the Gemara upcoming, so there's a lot of information you need to know. In the next 5 minutes, I'm going to be presenting to you a lot of information. Okay, my best suggestion is just keep going over it again and again. I'm speaking to myself. Okay, but just you got to just make this like part of just repeat and make it rote. You have to know two psukim in the Torah when discussing the isser of a woman and her daughter or a woman and her mother, and that is the psukim in Achrimos and the psukim in Kedoshim, a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. I'm going to start off with the pasuk in Achrimos. This is Perek Yud Ches and Vayikra, pasuk Yud Zayin. I'm reading the pasuk. I'm just looking at psukim right now. The pasuk says, "Ervas Yisho Bital Lo Segala Es Bas Bina Es Bas Bital Lo Sikach Legalos Ervasa Sheira Hena Zima He." A man is not allowed to be with a woman and her daughter, with a woman and her granddaughter. And granddaughter over here means either his daughter's daughter or his son's daughter. The Torah says that that's arise. That's one of the arise. So in Parshas Achrimos, what are we introduced to? The idea that a man is not allowed to be with his wife's daughter or his wife's granddaughter. So, and now remember, as we have discussed already time and again, Achrimos lays out the Azharas, lays out the Yisurim in the Torah. The punishments comes one parsha later. In Kedoshim, the Torah introduces us to the punishments. Right? You only punish when there is a complementary pasuk that tells us the Yisur. So, the way the Torah sets up, Achrimos is the Azara, and Kedoshim is going to be the Onish. Okay? And as we all know, tomorrow morning, on Yom Kippur, what are we going to be reading about? We're going to be reading about the Arayos. We're going to be reading Parshas Achrimos and the Arayos on Mincha of Yom Kippur. Okay. So right now we have Achrimos, we have the Azara, and the Azara tells us that a man's not allowed to be with his wife, his daughter, his wife's daughter, his wife's granddaughter. Now we move over to Kedoshim, Parshas Kedoshim, where we have the Onish. And interestingly, there in Kedoshim, the Torah does not tell us that one is going to be subject to Sreifa when a man has relations with his wife's daughter or granddaughter. Interestingly, in Kedoshim, what does the Torah say? Well, I'll tell you. Pasuk is in Perichav, Pasuk Yudalid. V'ish asher yikach es isha ve'es ima zima hi ba'ish yisrafu oso ve'esem velosia zima v'sochachem. If a man has relations with a woman and her mother, so they're subject to the Sreifa penalty. So, in Achrimos, you have his wife and his wife's daughter and his wife's granddaughter. In Kedoshim, you have his wife and his wife's mother. So, in the Azara, you go down to a generation and a generation from there. In Kedoshim, in the Onesh, we go up one generation. Okay, that's just, and we're not even close to done yet. Okay, now let's go back to Parshas Kedoshim and let's look at that pasuk again. V'isha sheikach es isha v'sima zima hi be'esh yisrofu oso v'eshen. If a man would have relations with his wife and her mother, meaning your mother-in-law, so be'esh yisrofu, so having relations with your mother-in-law is subject to a sreifa penalty, oso v'eshen. Translation, him and them. V'lo si yazima b'sochachem. And we're not to conduct ourselves in such a lewd fashion. You're subject to the sreifa penalty and they're subject to the sreifa penalty. How do you understand the pasuk? Meaning, what does that mean, they're subject to the sreifa penalty? Certainly not your wife. Right? In other words, your wife is your wife. So one is certainly, your wife is certainly not going to be subject to the sreifa penalty just because your husband decided to have relations with your mother. That can't be. So what does the Torah mean when it says, osov eshen? Okay, so what we're learning in tomorrow's daf is that the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, exactly what the Torah means by that. We're also going to be learning in tomorrow's daf that there's going to be a machlokes between Abai and Rava. How do we understand the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel? For our purposes right now, let's just get the basics down. Tomorrow we're going to discuss in more detail. According to Rabbi Akiva, the eshen made reference over here is a reference to two women, meaning it's plural. So they're going to be subject to sreifa. But again, it can't be talking about your wife and your mother-in-law because they're both not going to be subject to the sreifa penalty. Right? The husband and the wife are mutter to one another. That's called marriage.
Why couldn't the yikach be, like, not a marriage, but like a rape? Like a
Let's get the information down. We could discuss. We can and we will discuss it later. Let's just get the information down. So the Eshen, says Rabbi Akiva, is referring to two women. So according to Rabbi Akiva, what two women are we talking about when that they're going to be subject to Sreifa? So Abaye tells us in tomorrow's daf that according to Rabbi Akiva, the two women are your mother-in-law and your mother-in-law's mother, meaning those are the two women that the Torah talks about. Now, it's true in the pasuk itself. It doesn't make any mention or reference to your mother-in-law's mother, but when the Torah says the word Eshen, that's it. Meaning that's where the Torah now describes a sreifa penalty for having relationship for both of them. Both of them meaning your mother-in-law and your mother-in-law's mother. That is Rabbi Akiva's understanding of the pasuk according to Abaye. And what does Rabbi Shmuel say? No. Rabbi Shmuel says that the word Eshen is actually making reference to one woman, and that is notably your mother-in-law. The word Eshen doesn't mean one, it means multiple. So we'll see this in tomorrow's daf. Rabbi Shmuel says that in the Greek language, the word hain means one. Okay? So yes, it's unusual that we use the Greek language to interpret the Torah, but it's unusual, but it's not unfounded. It's happened before, and it's happening in tomorrow's daf. That is Abaye's understanding of the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Again, we'll see this tomorrow as well. Rava says no. Rava says that the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel is not just a question of how to interpret the pasuk, because according to Abaye, there is no practical difference between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. It's just a question of how to interpret the words of the Torah. According to Rava, the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel is much more than just a question of how to interpret the pasuk. There actually is going to be a practical difference in halacha between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva says that the word Eshen means reference to both of them. But which both of them are we making reference to? According to Rabbi Akiva, we're talking about one's wife and one's mother-in-law. Back to our original question. How could it be your wife? Meaning, what does that mean? Meaning, certainly your wife is not going to be subject to Sreifa. According to Rava, what Rabbi Kiva is teaching us is the following novel halacha, which is that the only time that a person is going to be subject to the sreifa penalty for having relations with his mother-in-law is only while his wife is alive. Once your wife is dead, it's still usur, I'll say it as clearly as I can, it's still usur for a man to be with his mother-in-law because she was once a mother-in-law, always a mother-in-law, halachically speaking, from an erva standpoint. It's just that the sreifa penalty is no longer applicable once one's wife is dead. And the word Eshen is coming to teach us, according to Rabbi Kiva, that I need both of them to be alive in order to be subject to the sreifa penalty when one has relations with his mother-in-law.
Another
time, there will be another misa still. Not sreifa, but no misa. No misa. Okay. And Rabbi Shmuel, on this very point, disagrees. Rabbi Shmuel says, no, even after the wife is dead, it's still a sreifa penalty to have relations with one's mother-in-law. That is Rava's understanding of the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. All this now is background. Okay, now, if you remembered everything I just said, that's amazing. And I want your mind. Like, I'd be jealous of such a mind. I granted, by the way, I laid all that information out. You just got to go over it and review it again and again. Okay, like I did yesterday, so that I would have a clear head for today's daf. With all that now in mind, so now what we could do is we could take all that information and try to plug it into our Mishnah, and that's exactly what the Gemara does. And so it brings us now to the Gemara. Habal Isha Shenasa Bita Lokitani. The Mishnah does not say a man who has relations with a woman who you happen to marry her daughter, i.e. your mother-in-law. That's not what the Mishnah says. Ela habal isha ubita. The Mishnah's language is very carefully chosen. Having relations with a woman and her daughter. Mechlalati d'tavar li'isura. It means that both of them are asr. Okay? A woman and her daughter. And again, not your wife, but a woman and her daughter. So, umaninu chamosa v'im chamosa. So, who are two women who are? It's like trivia. Not trivial, but it's trivia. Who's going to be a woman and her daughter, who are both going to be usher to you? Well, the answer is going to be your mother-in-law's mother and your mother-in-law. Okay. Now, Viketani, now, if that's the right pshat in the Mishnah, now look at how the Mishnah progresses from there. It says Yesh Bechlal Isha Ubita. It says that that's the prototype, and here now are going to be all your subcategories within the prototype. Mechlal de Tavayik Siva Behedja. Vehanach Midrasha Asya. So from the progression of the Mishnah, what's the indication? These two women are going to be the ones who are explicitly mentioned in the Torah, and everything else are just derivatives of that scenario. Okay. According to Abaye, perfect. Because remember, how did Abaye understand the Pasuk in Kedoshim? Specifically the word Eshen. Abaye said that according to Rabbi Akiva, Eshen is making reference to your mother-in-law's mother and your mother-in-law. So according to Abaye, within the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, they are both mentioned in the Torah. Albeit somewhat cryptically, but they're both mentioned in the Torah with the word Eshen. Now again, not according to both opinions, not according to both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, but at least according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. That would mean then that our Mishnah, according to Abaye, subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva. And then, good, we have Pshat in the Mishnah. And I'm just going to reiterate it one more time. Meaning, according to Abaye, according to Rabbi Akiva, here's how our Mishnah works. Our Mishnah says, a man is forbidden to be with Isho Bita, a woman and her daughter. That's specifically referring to your mother-in-law's mother and your mother-in-law. That's the woman and her daughter. And that's explicitly mentioned in the Torah by the word Esen. And then all the other examples in the Mishnah are derivatives of that scenario. Fine. And then the Mishnah would work out good. Now, our Mishnah would not be subscribing to Rabbi Shmuel because remember, Rabbi Shmuel says the word Esen of the Torah is only making reference to one woman, not two women. Because Rabbi Shmuel understands the word Esen not as the Hebrew word them, but as the Greek word one of them. Fine. Ela l'Rava damar chamosolah chamisa ikabeinau masisan mani. But Rava and his understanding of the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that they are not they are not arguing about just simply how to interpret the Torah, but what they're arguing about is a practical debate, a halachic debate of whether one is subject to the shreifa penalty of having relations with one's mother-in-law after the death of one's wife. But that means then that according to the two of them, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, the Torah is only making reference to your mother-in-law, not to your mother-in-law's mother. So how then did you understand the Mishnah? Because when the Mishnah is giving us the prototype case, the case that's mentioned in the Torah, and it says Isho Bita, according to Rava, both according to Rabbi Akiva and according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Torah is not talking about your mother-in-law's mother. So then it's not a prototype case. So then what's the Mishnah talking about? Amalcha Rava, so Rava will tell you, Tini Habal Isha Shenasabita. So what the Gemara rejected in the introduction to this whole discussion, Rava will tell you, let's reintroduce that. Meaning, you thought the Mishnah was talking about a man having relations with two women, a woman and a daughter, and being subject to an Isser for both of them. No. What the Mishnah means is, a man is not to be with a woman whose daughter he married, i.e., on one's mother-in-law. That's all the Mishnah means. Okay. Yesh bichlal isha ubita chamos veim chamos veim chamav. Le Abaye. So now, again, let's just quickly refresh. According to Abaye, our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that one's mother-in-law and one's mother-in-law's mother are both explicitly mentioned in the Torah. Then what the Mishnah went on to do is give all the derivative examples. Of the derivative examples that were given in the Mishnah then reviewed one's mother-in-law, one's mother-in-law's mother, and one's father-in-law's mother. Now, of those three, two of them are already covered in the Torah. So the Gemara says, that's fine. So la bai, I did the call by lemesne, em chamav, tinina mi chamoso ve em chamoso. So the Gemara says, okay, so according to Abai, you're right. The mother-in-law and mother-in-law's mother already mentioned the Torah. Those are not derivative scenarios, but the only reason why the Mishnah went over them again is because the Mishnah wanted to also introduce us to one's father-in-law's mother. Le Rava, I did the Kabbalah Mishnah, Eim Chamav, Eim Chamoso, Tini Nami Chamoso. Now, according to Rava, which of the Arayos is mentioned in the Torah? Only one's mother-in-law. So then the Mishnah is reviewing that, but only to get to the next generation above, which is one's mother-in-law's mother and one's father-in-law's mother. Minani Mili. Okay. How do we get here? Meaning, how do we know that one is subject to the Sreifa penalty for? Now, think about it. Our Mishnah listed nine women. your mother-in-law, your mother-in-law's mother, your father-in-law's mother, your wife's daughter, your wife's daughter's daughter, your wife's son's daughter, your daughter, your daughter's daughter, your son's daughter. 9 women in the Mishnah, all subject to the Sreifa penalty. The Torah only talks about the Sreifa penalty for one's mother-in-law. And according to Rabbi Kiva, according to Abaye, your mother-in-law's mother. But that's it. So how do we get from those 2 women to all the women listed in our Mishnah? That's what we're going to be doing in the upcoming Brisa. Tana Rabbanan. Isha sheikach es isha ve'es ima ein li'al isha ve'ima. The Torah only tells me the Sreifa penalty for a woman and her mother. Bas isha bas bita. Bas bita bas bina minayin. How do I know that even your daughter, your daughter-in-law, sorry, I didn't mean that. Your daughter, your daughter's daughter, your son's daughter. Namar kanzima v'namar lahalan zima. Ma lahalan bita ubas bita ubas bina. Avkan bita ubas bita ubas bina. So we're learning it out through Gzeira Shava. It says zima on both occasions. So that just like with your wife's daughter and granddaughter, so too with your daughter and your granddaughter. Minayin la'aso zechaim kinekevos. Now we're reading on in the Brisa, and assurances right now that we don't know what we're saying. Right now, the Brisa is for sure trying to make a point. I'm just going to read the Brisa, and we're just going to translate, and I'll allow the Gemara to clarify a little bit later on. How do I know that males should be like females? Ne'emar kan zima v'ne'emar lahalan zima. Ma lahalan zechaim kinekevos, av kan zechaim kinekevos. Just like over there, the males are like females, same is true over here. We don't know what that means at this point in time. Okay, we're going to discover that, what that means later on. And then, finally, minayin la'asos lamata kalamala, how do I know that I should make above like below? Again, an assurance that we don't know what's going on right now in the Brisa. That too is going to be explained later on. Ne'emar kan zima v'ne'emar lahalan zima. So again, the word zima is mentioned in both places. Malahan lamata kalamala, afkan lamata kalamala. Uman kan lamala kalamata, afalahalan lamala kalamata. Okay, so we did an excellent job reading the Brisa. We did a really poor job understanding the Brisa, because it's cryptic. And so, you know how the Gemara works. So after introducing us to the Brisa, now the Gemara is going to explain line by line what each point in the Brisa meant. Amar. Minayin la'asos zechaim kinekevos. So we're really up to like the second part of the Brisa. The first part of the Brisa is very clear. The first part of the Brisa was introducing us to this idea that not only is one's wife's daughter and granddaughter going to be Aser, but your daughter and your granddaughter are going to be Aser, and that's learned out through Gzeira Shava. Fine. But then we move on to the next part of the Brisa, talking about males and females. Like, what is the Brisa talking about? Minayin la'asos zechaim kinekevos. Mai zechaim kinekevos. What does that mean? Ilema bas bina kibas bita. So, are we talking about how your son's daughter is going to be equivalent to your daughter's daughter, and male over here could just simply mean your granddaughter, daughter of your son, just like your granddaughter, daughter of your daughter? So the Gemara says, Bahadi Adar Kaasyan. The Gemara says, that's not learned in 2 different steps. That's coming together in 1 pasuk in the Torah. So that is not developmentally 1 stage later. That is at the same time the Torah teaches us both. So Ela Eim Chamav Ke'em Chamosa. So the Gemara says, oh, so well, you know what it must mean? It must mean that we're talking about your mother-in-law's mother and your father-in-law's mother. But the Gemara says, but that also is not a good pshat in the Brisa, because Hashta Eim Chamosa Lo Kamalan Eim Chamav Mehadar Allah, meaning the Brisa hasn't even established that your mother-in-law's mother is Usser. That's only coming in the 3rd part of the Brisa, which granted we haven't even clarified yet, but I'm just assuring you. That's coming up in the 3rd part of the Brisa. So the 2nd part of the Brisa is not going to teach us a halacha, which we haven't even learned the basis of that halacha yet until the 3rd part of the Brisa. So, Amar Abaye, Hachi Kamar. So Abaye says, so let's say now say, pshat in the 2nd part of the Brisa. Minayin la'asos she'er haba mimenu, kishe'er haba mimena. How do I know that the relatives that come out biologically from you are going to be the same as the relatives that come out biologically from her? How do I know that your children, your daughter, I should say, is going to be equivalent to your wife's daughter? Ne'emar kan zima v'ne'emar lahalan zima. So the Gemara says, v'ha b'sher didei lo k'siva be'zima. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. From a technical standpoint, the word Zima in the Torah is told to us when referencing one's daughter, one's wife's daughter, and one's wife's granddaughter. The word Zima is also mentioned in Parshas Kedoshim when referencing one's mother-in-law, but the word Zima is not actually used when describing your own biological daughter or your own biological granddaughter. And when I say biological daughter, I mean you didn't marry the woman, you had her out of wedlock, so it's not your wife's daughter, it's strictly now your daughter and your granddaughter. And the word Zima is not used over there. So Amar Rava, Amar Li, Rav Yitzchak bar Vidumi, Asya Hina Hina, Asya Zima Zima. So the Gemara says we're learning out through a double Gzera Shava. And I'm not going to go through the Pesukim right now. Please see Rashi, who introduces us to how we get through this double Gzera Shava. But the double Gzera Shava teaches us that not only is one going to be subject to the Sreifa penalty for having relations with one's wife's daughter and granddaughter, but even for your own daughter and granddaughter, it's learned out through a double Gzera Shava. Amar Minayin La'asos Lamata Kalamala. My Lamata Kalamala. Gemara says, what did the Braisa mean in that third piece? One up, one down. So Ilem Abbas Bina Abbas Bita Kibita Bahade Adadikasyan. The Gemara says, are we talking about your granddaughter and your daughter? Again, the Gemara says, no, we're not talking about that. That's not taught to us in stages. The Torah in one pasuk teaches us the halacha of one's wife's daughter and one's wife's granddaughter. Ella, Eim Chamav Ve'eim Chamoso Kichamoso. It's coming to teach us about your mother-in-law's mother and your father-in-law's mother, which is going to be equivalent to your mother-in-law. Hai lamata kalamala lamala kalamata have. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem with that. It's really simple. Generationally, the Braisa is going in the wrong order. Meaning, because the Braisa said that it's lamata kalamala. The lower generation is going to be like the upper generation. What do you mean? The Torah explicitly mentions your mother-in-law, the lower generation. What the Braisa should have said is that the higher generation is to be treated like the lower generation. Your mother-in-law's mother should be treated like your mother-in-law. Just like by one's mother-in-law, one's subject to Sreifa, so too by your mother-in-law's mother, one's subject to Sreifa. So the way the Braisa presents it, the Braisa should say, Lamala Kalamata. So the Gemara says, Tani Lamala Kalamata. So the Gemara's solution right now is, let's either edit the Braisa or reinterpret the Braisa. I hachi nemer kan zima, v'nemer lahalan zima. Uma hashta, inu lo ksiva zima, didhu ksiva. So the Gemara says, yeah, the word Zima, the word Zima is not where one's mother-in-law's mother is actually making reference to. Zima is mentioned by one's mother-in-law. Zima is mentioned by one's wife's daughter and granddaughter. But there's no Zima reference to one's mother-in-law's mother. I'm Rabbi Hachi Kamar. So again, Abaye clarifies this point as well. Minayin la'aso shlosh doros lamala k'shlosh doros lamata. So Gemara says, this is what the Braisa means. By introducing us to the Gzera Shava of Zima Zima, what the Braisa actually means is, is that what we're going to do is we're going to treat the generations above like the generations below. Again, remember, in Achremos, the Torah tells us that one's not allowed to have relations with one's wife's daughter and granddaughter. In Kedoshim, the Torah says one's not allowed to have relations with one's wife's mother. But that only goes up one generation. What we're going to do is we're going to take the, and in both Pesukim, the word Zima is mentioned, which means that Xerishava opens up a portal between these two. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the two generations downward, and we're just going to apply that to Parshas Kedoshim. If we're going two generations down, so we're also going to go two generations up as well. Nemar Lamata Zima of Nemar Lamala Zima, Ma Lamata Shloshadoros, Af Lamala Shloshadoros. Just like in Achremos, it goes, now the Gemara here says three generations, but your wife is generation number one. So from there, it goes down a generation, it goes down another generation. So that's generations two and three. So in Kedoshim, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to go up a generation, we're going to go up a generation from there. So that's one's mother-in-law and one's mother-in-law's mother. Ma ba'onesh asa lamata kilamala, af ba'azar nami asa lamala kilamala, kilamata. And we're going to do the following. So we're going to also transpose in both directions. We're going to say that not only is the onish going to go from generation one up and two up, but generation one down and two down. But for the Azhar, we're going to say the same thing as well. That the Isser in the Torah is also going to be for generations one and two going down, or let me use the Gemara's language, generations two and three going down, and generations two and three going up as well. So basically now, we have, through the Gzeira Shava, five generations that are covered. Meaning with one's wife, we're going to go up two, we're going to go down two. And so therefore, for one's wife, there would be a Sreifa penalty for having relations with one's wife's daughter, granddaughter, and mother and grandmother. Okay. Rav Ashi Amar, now what Rav Ashi is going to do over here is simply leave the Braisa as it is, and the problem was the direction of the Braisa, and just give a very creative way to understand what the Braisa meant. Amar lo olam kediktani, leave the Braisa as it is, umay lamata, lamata bi'isser. The point of the Braisa is that when it says lamata, we assume lamata meant going down a generation. Rav Ashi says no. Lamata actually means one's mother-in-law's mother. So how is that lamata? That's lamala. So Rav Ashi says creatively that no. When we're saying the words lamata, lamala, what we mean by that is we're talking about grading it on a curve, so to say. Meaning, of the two, your mother-in-law and your mother-in-law's mother, which one of them is explicitly mentioned in the Torah? Your mother-in-law. Your mother-in-law's mother is either learned out through the word Esen, or it's learned out through Drush. Either way, in other words, it's not as pronounced and not as explicit as one's mother-in-law. So when we're saying Lamala and Lamata, we just simply mean, of those women, who is explicitly mentioned? Your mother-in-law. Below that, when we say below that, we don't mean generationally. We just mean from a standpoint of the gravity of Isser. Which one now is, cause it's not a lesser Isser, by the way, because it's still an Isser Shreifa, but which one is learned out either through the cryptic Esen or through the Drasha, your mother-in-law's mother. So it's down in that it's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. Rav Ashi says that's what the Braisa means when the Braisa says Lamata Mehen. Right, it's more distant, even though it's a reference to your mother-in-law's mother, not your mother-in-law. Okay, let's recap and conclude and pick it up tomorrow. And by the way, this is I know it sounds strange, but it falls in line with tomorrow. We're going to be reading from the Arayos in the afternoon, meaning we'll be right. I know it's funny, but it's topical. It's topical discussion for tomorrow. We finished off the discussion of the Gemil Chamuros, introduced ourselves to the concept of Avizrai D'Arayos, not only for Erva, as one's supposed to give up his life, but even for subcategories of Erva, as the Gemara concluded the 8th Perek of Sanhedrin. And then we moved on to the topic of Sreifa, Mises based in Sreifa, who's subject to Sreifa, the Baskonus Mizana, and Isha Ubita, a woman and her daughter. What is that making reference to? So after the daf today, maybe you'd be a little bit confused, but in terms of the halacha, it's very clear. Meaning, who does it include? It includes your wife, meaning obviously not your wife per se, that's mutter, but your wife's mother mother and grandmother, your wife's daughter and granddaughter. And by grandmother, we mean both paternal and maternal. By granddaughter, we mean the granddaughter is coming either through her daughter or through her son. And then, also included in that is also going to be your daughter and your granddaughter. What about one's mother, one's grandmother? Stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that tomorrow. And then, we also introduced ourselves today to the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel in terms of how to understand the psukim in Kedoshim, specifically the word Esen, and the machlokas between Abai and Rava in terms of understanding the parameters of the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. And we're going to get to go over that again tomorrow because that's also part of tomorrow's daf as well.